The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Matt, did you see that news story about the guy who got hit in the head with a can of soda?
No.
Now, he's all right because it was a soft drink, but, you know.
Man, that's a Laffy Taffy joke.
Yeah,
man.
It is. Yeah, it is. Good. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I am good, man.
Good, good. So, let us be the last to say Happy New Year to you guys.
Let's be the last.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. If we're the last, we're going to say Happy 2025.
Yeah, right. Well, it's going to be the thing. Start getting used to writing 26 on stuff instead of 25.
Oh, yeah, God. I've gotten better at the month thing. Because, you know, I have to write a numerical date every day at work.
Right,
and,
right.
And I will screw it up sometimes, but I've gotten a lot better. But the year will mess me up till March.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, well, see, always.
I label all of the files for all these episodes. And when I was typing this one out, I put January 2025. And I'm like, no, stupid.
What
no.
Happened? Well, I wonder if we upload that, if it'll screw stuff up, like it'll shift it all the way back in you front remember, of like whatever show yeah. came out at the beginning of last year.
You remember Y2K? Everybody was worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what would happen. Anybody born in, you know, 1900. Something would mess up, and all the electronic payments and all this stuff would just crack. I remember specifically worrying about that.
People lost their minds. I knew a guy that built a dadgum compound.
Oh, wow.
Because it was like, it's going to be the apocalypse or something.
Yep.
And then nothing happened. No, yeah. I mean, nothing happened.
Nothing. Yep.
Well, everything was like, yeah, it's all right.
Computers were so new in households at that point that nobody understood the programming. And I can remember my dad worked for the gas company. And for that night, New Year's Eve, he had to go sit on a substation because it was freezing temperatures. And they were worried that the computers would mess up at midnight.
Yeah.
And something would happen, and with it being freezing temperatures and the Y2K thing. So they had somebody from the gas company go and sit on every substation they could just in case something happened so they could shut it off or something like that. So we as a family drove out there and sat in the car with Dad at midnight to, you know, so we could celebrate New Year with him.
Well, oh, I was going to say, why the hell did y'all have to go?
Well, so we could celebrate the New Year with him. And just in case the world went to hell, we'd all be together.
That's
least,
true. You know? I guess. Yeah, there was that. Yeah.
But before we get too far off, we'll say, like,
man, is this side quest? What the hell? What are they doing?
Right. We'll say that let's make 26 a year of sharing graveyard tales. So every opportunity you get this year, share graveyard tales with somebody. Mm-hmm. Let's make 26 one of the biggest growth years for graveyard tales that we've had in many years. I remember we asked early on to share the episodes and the show, and we just haven't done it as much here lately. But, you know, we're still trying to get back some listeners from when Apple and iTunes screwed us in 2025. So if you could help us, let's grow the graveyard some more. Also, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. We've got multiple different levels. And as always, it's not changing anytime soon. Everybody gets a bonus episode a week. You know, just because it's a new year doesn't mean it's a new plan just yet. So go over to Patreon. You can get a bonus episode a week, plus our $5 and $10. They get the audio and video ad-free versions of the main episode. And our $10, they get all of that, plus they get audio and video of our second show, SideQuest. So if you want to hear me and Matt in a different scenario where we're not as, I don't know how to put it, Matt.
We are not buttoned down.
Right.
It is loose. It is casual. It is sometimes a little blue, but it's funny and it's Adam and I just having a good time. So check it out.
Right.
I mean, it's worth a listen. You'll probably learn something. You'll probably learn something you wish you hadn't learned.
So that's true.
Go
too.
Check it out. We appreciate it because by doing this, you're helping out the show. And that's the ultimate. You know, don't think of it as like, I gotta pay for this. I'm acting like idiots. No, you're helping the show, and you get to hear us act like idiots. So
right,
you know,
right.
Think about it that way.
Yep, and it's a great deal. I mean, nowadays, you know, you're looking for a deal everywhere. And this is a great deal. You get a back catalog full of episodes ranging in topics, and it's fairly cheap. So yeah. Go over there, check it out. Patreon.com/graveyardtales. Also, right just before I hand it over to Matt here, go and check out our sponsors. If you haven't gotten you something from one of our sponsors, that is another way that you can help our show out. When you go and visit their website, use our code, buy something from them, it lets them know that you heard about their product on our show. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and they sponsor another episode of Graveyard Tales. So it helps us out tremendously. So check out our sponsors in the show notes. You can find links and all that. All right, Matt, on that note, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right, so tonight, we are heading deep into the Ecuadorian Amazon to talk about a mystery that, honestly, Adam, sounds like it's a plot from an Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. We are going to talk about Cueva de los Taos. Taos. How do you say it?
Taos.
Taos. My Southern's coming out, which is the Taos Cave. And on the surface, this is just a massive cave system that is named after the birds that live there. But if you start digging into the legends, this is the hiding place of what has been called the Metal Library, which is supposedly a secret collection of thousands of golden books, crystal sarcophagi, and giant skeletons that supposedly are the proof that there is a lost advanced civilization that once lived underground.
Right.
This is a wild story. Okay.
I love it.
And we're going to dig into it. But first, we got to talk about the geography and the history of the people around there, because it speaks to if there is or was a lost civilization. People say we would have found the evidence by now. But I'm telling you, if they wanted to hide this thing on Earth, on a terrarial ground, this would be the place to do it.
Yes, right.
You are not going to accidentally stumble upon this thing. It's no way.
No, that ain't happening.
So, Adam, why don't we dig into a little of the history and geography of the Cueva de los Taos?
All right. So, as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about in this episode is sourced and referenced in those show notes. So go down there and check it out. You can continue the research if you like, or you can just check and make sure we're quoting the information correctly. Now, Taos Cave, or like Matt said, also known as Cueva de los Taos, is located in the Morona Santiago province in southeastern Ecuador. And it sits on the eastern slopes of the Andes Mountains in the Amazon rainforest. And a little sidebar here, the Andes is where chinchillas live, and we own a chinchilla and have owned chinchillas for a while. Mm-hmm. They are originally from the Andes Mountains.
Huh. I just learned something on Graveyard Tales from Adam, of all people.
Yeah, I know. That's a weird thing to have happen. But so technically, you might be out there looking for Taos Cave and see a chinchilla on the side of the mountain.
Technically, everything I know about chinchillas I've learned from Adam.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. I've had a chinchilla for many years. They are fun little creatures. Now, the cave is found about 2 kilometers south of the Santiago River and about 800 meters west of the Congos River. Now, it lies at an elevation of approximately 539 to 800 meters above sea level, and that depends on the entrance location within the cave, because there are a couple entrances into the cave, but we'll talk about the main entrance here in a second. But the main entrance is where, if you're going to go look in this cave and explore this cave, that's the way you would get in, because despite what I'm going to tell you here in a little bit, it's the easiest way to get into the cave.
Easiest.
Yeah, please put that in quotes.
When you hear this, you're going to be going, that's the easiest way? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll also know why Matt said, if you're going to hide something, lost civilization, this is a good place to hide it.
Yep.
Now, the surrounding landscape is mountainous, obviously, being in the Andes Mountains, but it's also covered by tropical rainforest, and it forms part of the territory that's traditionally inhabited by the Shuar people. Now, how do you get into Taos Cave? Well, most visitors begin in a major Ecuadorian city like Quito or Guayaquil or Cuenca, and they travel by bus or private car to the Morona Santiago province. And then, you know, destinations like Macas and Limon that serve as staging points. Well, then from there, you would travel, usually bus or taxi, to the river port in the town of Mendez. Now, the journey continues by boat up the Rio Santiago, often several hours riding a boat up the river, and you get to this landing near the Shuar community and their villages and stuff. And from the community, you then got to hike several kilometers, and usually takes 4+ hours to get there through the humid rainforest and up into the mouth of this cave. So it is not easy to get to. It is a very difficult journey, and not a ton of people do this, obviously. There's been some famous people to do it, which Matt will talk about, but not many just Joe Schmoes like me and Matt would go to Ecuador and try to get in Tayo's Cave. Now, the entrance to Tayo's Cave is through a vertical shaft drop. It's about 200 feet of descent from the mouth of the cave down to the bottom of the cave. So you have to know how to rappel and have the right equipment and training, and you have to have assistance from the local guides that know how to get in. Because I watched video of people doing this, and you have to, one of the guides will go up and set an anchor point on the side of the cave, and then you've got to lean out over this huge chasm and start rappelling 200 feet down.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Matt, but I ain't doing that.
No.
I'm not doing it. Now, once you get inside, you've got to traverse large chambers, narrow passages. There's underground rivers in this cave. Lots of rocks that have fallen from the roof of the cave that you've got to climb over. So you have to have specialized caving gear, and it's not for the unfit. So yet another reason you and I probably wouldn't do it. It's not accessible for independent travelers either, or just, you know, casual tourists, because of the safety and the logistics of it, but also because of the cultural protocols of the Shuar people that live there and, you know, inhabit that land.
Mm-hmm.
They keep the casual tourists out. Now, the cave is primarily sandstone, which is unusual for the caves in Ecuador, because most of the caves in Ecuador are limestone. So it's unusual for this to be a sandstone cave. But the chambers inside the cave have flat, smooth walls and symmetrical-looking divisions between the chambers. So that's why geologists say that it's a natural formation caused by the sandstone, but it's also the reason that other peoples have said these caves look man-made instead of natural. And you'll just have to look up pictures and judge for yourself based on the pictures and what we tell you. But the cave features a variety of geological formations, like most caves, stalactites, stalagmites, large galleries, which are just big rooms within the cave. And they've got huge rock formations there that they say suggest long-lasting natural sculpting processes. Now, the environment inside the cave is shaped by the presence of the underground rivers and the tropical climate on the outside. So it influences the humidity and the biosphere inside the cave because of the oil birds that rest inside this cave and the guano that they produce. So I'll touch on it later, but the whole first part of this cave, you're walking through bird crap.
A lot of it.
Yeah, bird and bat crap.
Just, I mean, like layers of it.
Uh-huh. Like the ground feels soft because of how much crap is on the ground. Now, the cave has this vast network of chambers and tunnels. And like I said, they've got loose boulders everywhere. There's narrow passages, flooded chambers. And it often, a lot of times, means through walking through ankle-deep guano.
Ankle deep.
Think about that.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I don't want to walk through ankle deep poo, no matter what kind of poo it is.
I'm not sure I want to walk through ankle deep anything.
That's a valid point. This is maybe water at the beach.
This would be at the bottom of the list.
Right. Right.
Stuff I would walk ankle deep through.
Yep. And like the side quest I did on the cave incident, you've got to squeeze between boulders. There's underground streams and waterfalls that you have to go through. And it's not an easy hike to get into this cave and traverse it. And one of the things I was watching about this cave, Matt, they don't have a lot of it mapped because it floods. And so to get to other parts of the cave, you have to go underwater, hold your breath, and try to come through a tunnel up and out of the water on the other side. I don't know about you, but I don't want to do that. If I don't know how far the passage is, like how long am I going to have to be holding my breath? Can I make it to the other side? Am I going to have to turn around and come back? Like, I'm sweating thinking about it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
It just gives me the willies thinking about caving and spelunking in here. Now, the largest chamber is known as the cathedral.
And they all are. Have you noticed that? Every time we talk about a cave like this or a cave system, they have a huge underground room, and it's always called the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I went and looked up. I was like, well, maybe the term cathedral means like big room or something. No, it means seat. So right. I don't know why, but they always choose cathedral, I guess because of the high. So it's because it reminds them of like a steepled church. I mean, that literally what it reminds people of. So that's
gotta be the only reason.
Yeah.
Because like you said, every cave has a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
This measures approximately 20 meters long and 12 meters high. So it's huge. Now the humidity in the cave is really high, but temperatures are cooler than the surface. So the air actually feels damp as you're walking through, but it's it's not sweltering like the jungle outside is, but the darkness in the cave is absolute. If you don't have a light, it's pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your face. So that's another thing. I don't like the caving. Because I've been in caves where they turn out the lights and it's just pitch black. Because if something happens and your battery dies, you don't have extra batteries or an extra light, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no getting out.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. I would have some. They were like, why is your backpack so heavy, Matt? Because I've got all the batteries.
Yep. I got about 1,000 batteries, and I've got 17 flashlights.
I'm toting like 400 pounds of D batteries.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Now, as Matt said, the cave is famous for the oil birds, or the tayos, which roost in the high ceilings, and they use echolocation to navigate within this cave. And their droppings form thick layers of guano on the floor of this cave. So this sustains a large population of insects like cockroaches, beetles, cave crickets, spiders, and scorpions.
Mm-hmm.
Matt and I were talking about this the other day while doing the research. That's a good way to keep me out.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, looking at some of the photos from the expeditions to see, you know, the size of some of these spiders and scorpions that are in there.
Yeah.
There was one they showed a picture of their toilet. There's a scorpion on it. They were like, this is why you always shine a light before you sit or touch.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of spiders. I mean, I'm not like terrified of them.
Yeah.
But I really hate scorpions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm just kind of like, I don't want to go.
Just no,
you go and then you come back and tell me about it.
Yeah. Send me pictures or something. Cause yeah, I'm not a big fan of spiders. I don't like scorpions, and cockroaches gross me out.
Oh yeah. And they're big, big, like translucent white cockroaches.
They're like,
cause they have no, like clear, no light.
Yeah. They're clear New York cockroaches.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Now, well, it's kind of like the iMac, you know, when everything decided, oh, we're going to make this one clear.
Mm-hmm. Right. Those computer screens from the early 2000s that It was like a clear blue or pink color.
Yeah, it's coming back. Yep. See, I mean, that's why these cockroaches are in style.
Yeah, right. Right. People are going to be wearing, instead of a brooch, they're going to be wearing a roach on their lapel. Now, larger predators like tarantulas and whip scorpions, they are all over this cave. And there's some small scorpions and spiders that carry very potent venom, it says.
Yeah,
and good tip for scorpions, you want to have the big ones sting you. You don't want the small ones to sting you, because the big ones are not as venomous as the small ones.
Really?
Big one, kind of like a bee sting. Small one could hurt like hell or cause worse.
Oh, problems. Man. See, so, I didn't know that either. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Get stung by a big one.
Have you ever been stung by a scorpion?
I have not.
Me either, and I don't plan on it. Thank goodness. Tennessee don't have them, really.
Yeah, Texas has them, but not where I'm at. And out in West Texas, they say just tap everything with your foot, which I do anyway here because of snakes.
Yeah.
Just tap things with your foot a time or two before you pick it up to make sure the scorpions and snakes run away. But amphibians like frogs and bats also inhabit the cave. And there's crabs and shrimp that are found near water sources within the cave.
Hey, didn't that just sound like he said that bats were amphibians?
Well, that's not what I meant.
Amphibious bats are in this cave. Look out.
Yeah.
I'm done. And there's just no reason for me to go. In fact, I'm tired of talking about it.
If you got amphibious bats, I don't want to see them. Now, the food web there in the cave is built around the nutrients supplied by the bird crap. Yeah. So the guano on the floor is the main source of nutrients for what lives in this cave. But there's also, you know, decomposing organic material that blows in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the predatory cycle among insects and small animals. But I don't want to go in a place that the main part of the food web is poop.
Yep.
You know me and poop. Doo-doo's my kryptonite.
And you left out one, snakes.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And the reason I learned researching this was I was looking at one of the expedition videos, and they were talking about the snakes that they did not see. But they said, we know they're there because there is virtually an endless supply of birds as prey. Mm. So they were like, when you have all these birds in there, you're going to have these snakes because they're going to eat them. And so they said, we didn't see any, but we knew they were in there. And I'm like, that's even worse.
I was going to say, you know what's worse than seeing a snake?
Not
seeing a snake. Yep.
Yeah, that's terrible.
At least if you see it, you know how to get away from it. No if you kidding. Don't see it, you don't know where it's coming from.
Now, the cave, as if it didn't, if it needed any extra, you know, it's a ridiculously huge cave system in Ecuador, you know, so it would be famous in South America. But it gained some worldwide notability when this legend about this hidden metal library became, you know, more well known. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it was created and hidden there by some lost civilization. Now, the whole world, at least, you know, the anthropology world is that their interest is piqued. Okay.
Sure.
So let's start with the legend. Okay, let's just start about where this came from.
Start at the start.
So, as I said, the outside world first became aware of this cave through Father Carlo Crespi. He was a priest, a researcher, and an explorer of Italian heritage. In the 1920s, Father Crespi conducted several investigations in the Ecuadorian Amazon, where he contacted the Shuar tribes. He earned their trust and then learned about the existence of the Cueva de los Taos. He even made a documentary about the native Shuar in 1927.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no joke. That's early. This dude's on it, okay?
Yep.
Here's the thing about the Shuar people.
David Attenborough looks up to
That's
him.
That's right. The Shuar tribe was known for a particular practice. I mean, they were known for a lot of things, but they were very well known for one particular practice. And that practice is called, I'm going to mispronounce it, I'm going to try, Santsa. It's T-S-A-N-T-S-A, Santsa. Okay?
I'll go with
it. Do you know what that is?
Sounds good. No.
That is head shrinking.
Oh,
so
cool.
They were headhunters, and you know, there's a reason for it. I mean, they just don't like to go look at all our heads. It was a battle thing. It was a way to put fear into other tribes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hanging these heads up going, you want this to be you? Then come mess with us.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, this was all just a way to, you know, to strike fear in their enemies. You know, like mm-hmm. you don't want your head hanging, you know, shrunk up and hanging from my belt, do you? Well, you best leave us alone. So
right.
They were not like uber friendly for outsiders coming in, at least not initially. So the fact that Father Crespi was able to gain these tribal people's trust was pretty impressive, to say the least. And you know, seeing him as an outsider, and they began to welcome him and shared a lot of this knowledge that they had with him. And then he was there able to share it with the world. But over time, they began to give him these odd gifts, these mysterious artifacts. Some were made of gold, and they were engraved with symbols that resembled pyramids. They looked like Mesopotamian writings. And they were designs similar to ancient artifacts that are found in the Middle East and North Africa. Now, we've heard this before. You know, mm-hmm. We talked about Kincaid's cave in the Grand Canyon. What were those artifacts supposed to have? It looked like Egyptian hieroglyphs, but it wasn't. It looked... Mm-hmm. like Egyptian hieroglyphs, okay?
Right.
It looked like Egyptian artifacts, but it wasn't. You know, they were always a little off, but they were very similar. That's what we're talking about here. Very similar to things that are found in the Middle East. What are they doing in Ecuador in South America, okay?
Right.
So some believed that these artifacts that Father Crespi collected came from the depths of the Taos cave. And this collection of these artifacts became known as the collection of Father Crespi. They didn't get real fancy with the name. So they just call it what it is.
Tell it like it is, man.
Who is this collection belong to? Father Crespi. Oh, this is the collection of Father Crespi. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
makes sense.
A variety of the pieces were actually found in the cave by the priest, and later they were exhibited in Crespi's private museum in Ecuador. The objects they found were related to Mesopotamian, Shuar, and pre-Shuar cultures. So the tribal people that were there before the Shuar people.
Hmm.
So that's just a way to say these are really, really, really old. And there were only a few photographs and videos that were actually documented, because most of them were sold or stolen when Crespi's church burned down in 1962. But unfortunately, Crespi's collection was stolen before archaeologists could properly study it. How convenient. Somebody stole
right.
it. What happened to your homework? Somebody stole it.
Yeah, the dog stole it. I mean, ate it. I mean... something.
No, but that's the story, okay? So in the 1960s, a Hungarian-Argentine explorer named Juan Moritz he was inspired by these artifacts that Father Crespi had, and so he decided that he was going to venture deep into the Shuar jungle looking for their origin. Now, Moritz claimed to have discovered the cave and descended to its depths, where he allegedly found tunnels carved by unknown methods. Unknown methods carved, okay? He also found crystal sarcophagi. Sarcophagi? Should I say it one more time incorrectly?
Whatever. But, sarcophagi. Yeah,
but he said these crystal sarcophagi contained the skeletons of giants. Also, check our episode on Kincaid's Cave. Sounds very similar.
Yep. Yep.
But most importantly, he found a vast library of golden books inscribed with alien-like symbols. The books were too heavy to remove. So his expedition, they didn't have cameras to document them.
Hmm.
What? It's the 1960s. You going down in this cave looking for the origin of these artifacts. You didn't bring a camera. Yeah. I guess he just automatically assumed, I'm going to drag all this stuff out of this cave.
Right.
No reason to take photographs of it.
Yeah, I'll be able to get it out. I don't need to document it there, but I don't know. I would want to document, even if I could get it out, I'd want to document where I found it.
Look, you know, no selfies, nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
So, When he got out, he comes out of the cave, and he pleads with the Ecuadorian government for permission to lead an official expedition to retrieve the Golden Library. And they actually granted him access and returned with the Ecuadorian military.
Hmm.
But the expedition ran out of money before it had a chance to locate the library. So, pretty frustrated and now broke, Moritz refused to cooperate with any future expeditions, and he himself never returned to the cave.
That's a bummer.
He stood by his claims. And his claims, they became fairly widespread. People were very interested in the fact that not only would this golden library exist, but that it would hold information that was proof of an ancient lost civilization that either lived in that area or actually lived underground in that cave.
Yeah, right.
You know, they didn't just hide it down there. They lived down there.
When we've got a lot of stories from a lot of cultures about them saying their ancestors lived underground.
Right.
So
it was safer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was bigger predatory stuff up top, so we got to go down, you know.
Yep. And there, I can't remember, it's in the Middle East somewhere, but there was a whole city found underground.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it they're not sure exactly when it was built or what for, but there was a whole city that was able to hold hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. And
so,
you know, that particular city you're talking about, they often wondered, because there's more city above it, and mm-hmm. they're kind of like, did they build this in case of something?
Right.
Or was this built first, and then they grew out of it?
Yeah, moved out.
Yeah,
and up.
Or, you know, or like it was some kind of natural disaster. Would they be able to escape down and then live out their civilization until the coast was clear and they could come back out? We're not really sure.
Asteroid or something.
Yeah. But word got around, and in 1968, a group of Mormons started to believe that these metal plates, these gold tablets that Moritz claimed were in the cave, were the same golden plates that are described in The Pearl of Great Price by Prophet Joseph Smith.
Hmm.
So the Mormons, they talked to Moritz and they asked for his guidance in the expedition. But there's no record that he actually ever took the Mormons to the supposed Golden Library. And according to Avril Jesperson, who's one of the people in the Mormon expedition, Moritz didn't really know what he was doing. It's quoted as saying, it seemed like this was the first trip Moritz took to the area. And Jesperson restates his claim years later, believing that Moritz had never actually been into the caves and had never seen any supposed Golden Library. He just made it up.
Really? Yeah.
But that was Avril Jesperson's take on it after talking to him and trying to convince him to take them there. I think that it's a 50-50 here. He either said, I made this up, and now I've got these Mormons knocking on my door, wanting me to take them because they think it's the same tablets Joseph Smith used. Mm-hmm. Or he did find it, but he's not about to take these Mormons down there who are going to want to take all these golden tablets.
Right.
So he's like,
I'll give them
we're
going
to give them the runaround, to the point that they were like, we don't even think this guy don't know what he's talking about. He's never been.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, you know, we're on a wild goose chase down here.
And I'll be honest with you. I think that the latter is probably it. Cause
possibly
if you know there's artifacts there that these people want and you know they're going to take them out of your country, why would you give them legit directions?
Yeah. Well, think about it. This is not the Smithsonian, you know, wanting to research and study and put them on display. You know, this isn't, you know, some other, you know, foreign nation, you know, wanting to, you know, claim, you know, a discovery of this magnitude. This would be a religious artifact to the Mormons.
Right.
Okay. This would solidify their religious beliefs. So, yeah, they're going to want them.
Yep.
They're gonna claim ownership to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. If Moritz had any idea that they may, whether they really were or not, he's not gonna be just overly enthused about introducing them, the Mormons, to these tablets because he's like, you know, they're gonna run over me and take these things. Because they're gonna claim them as religious artifacts, and they're gonna claim ownership, and I'm never gonna see them or any money from it at all. Nothing. No notoriety. Mm-hmm. Nothing. But Moritz's claims really became popular because of the Swiss author Erich von Däniken, and he was famous in those years for his controversial theories of extraterrestrial influence on early human culture. Okay? He is the original ancient aliens guy.
Yeah. He is.
Now,
and you'll know who he is if you've watched Ancient Aliens.
Absolutely. He is the guy.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
Now, von Däniken visited Ecuador, attracted by the story of the expedition. And in March of 1972, he met Moritz in Ecuador. Now, von Däniken held the notarial document of Moritz. He was like the official documentarian for what Moritz was doing. And he copied the photographic material. But a few months after their meeting, Däniken published all of this information in his book, which is considered controversial, called The Gold of the Gods in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you happen to look up the book Gold of the Gods and you go flipping through it, you're going to see some pretty amazing pictures of things down there. I mean, you're really going to begin to wonder, maybe this really did exist. Maybe this wasn't a hoax.
Yeah, it's not a bad book.
No.
I mean, I've read most of it. I haven't finished it, but I have read most of it, and it's very intriguing. Whether you believe it or not, it's intriguing.
The slant that von Däniken takes was kind of his forte at the time was that the tunnels that appeared to be cut perfectly were cut by man or not by nature. Let's say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And possibly even cut by lasers. And they contained evidence of what he called ancient astronauts or an extraterrestrial influenced civilization. So it was either the aliens themselves or a civilization that was highly influenced by aliens. Okay.
Right.
Much like people believe the Egyptians were. They were like, well, they didn't understand how to do all of this. They didn't understand how to, you know, line these pyramids up with the stars in the Orion constellation. Somebody showed them all of this. And so they were highly influenced by aliens. You know, that's still a theory today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Donnikin, he believed about the cave and about this supposed metal library. Now, the story of the caves, its alleged treasure, and the photographs in this book turned it into a bestseller. And 4 years later, the British government said, we're in. Okay? And they financed the largest mission to the Taos Caves to date. The military, junta that governed Ecuador at the time cooperated fully with this new expedition and declared it of national interest. So the government, the Ecuadorian government was on board. You've got the money backing from the British. It's time to rock. We're going to figure out what's going on.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
In 1976, Scottish engineer and treasure hunter Stan Hall traveled to Ecuador to examine Father Crispy's remaining artifacts.
Yeah.
He was convinced that these things were significant. So he led the expedition into the Taos Caves. The Ecuadorian army cleared a landing zone near the cave and handled all the logistics for transporting 45 tons of equipment, provisions, and personnel into the jungle.
Again, that's probably the most that has gone to any cave expedition.
Yeah. And again, it's in the jungle.
Yeah.
So like we said, if somebody was going to hide something that you, I mean, it was hard enough just to find the cave itself and then get there. And then you're just at the opening. You still got that 200-foot drop.
Yeah. No.
So Hall enlisted none other than Neil Armstrong. Yet,
bum, 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 bum.
That Neil Armstrong. Okay.
Yep.
The first man to walk on the moon served as the expedition's honorary president.
You've walked that high up in the air. Let's walk this low in the ground.
And a lot of people said, why would Neil Armstrong want to be a part of this? And they speculate that Armstrong, who was rumored to have witnessed something unexplainable on the lunar surface, was drawn to the cave by its alleged connection to extraterrestrial mysteries. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. If you did witness something crazy on the moon, then you might think, what are the connections to our Earth with this? And if somebody mentions, hey, this might be extraterrestrial, you're like, oh, let me see if it resembles what I saw.
That's it. That's the crux right there to me, is that if he saw something up there, which is always rumored, he didn't ever say.
Right.
But if he did, and he thought even briefly that he could find something here on Earth that was similar to what he saw, then that would give him enough evidence to be able to say, this is what I saw, and it matches what we found in this cave. Mm-hmm. So I think that that may be exactly why Neil Armstrong wanted to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Because again,
so.
Spiders and snakes and scorpions and a 200-foot drop and tons of bird crap.
Spiders and snakes and scorpions. Oh, my.
You had me at 200-foot drop. Like, I'm out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had me at like 4 hours hike through the Amazon rainforest. No thanks.
Now, the Hall expedition explored the cave and did uncover ancient artifacts, including evidence of a sophisticated prehistoric culture. But no golden library, crystal sarcophagus, none of that was found. Now, the local Shuar insisted that the explorers had gone in from the wrong entrance, and that the true location of the metal library remained a guarded secret. Like the Shuar knew. Well, I'm like, if you knew we were going in the wrong way, why didn't you say something?
Yeah.
You know,
probably the same reason old boy, Moritz didn't want to tell.
Right. 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 He was like, no, this is ours. We're the guardians of this thing.
Well, and the whole time, you know, he knows they're dropping 200 feet, and he's like, I didn't do that. I walked right in.
Yeah. Went around the back.
I used the back door. There's a screen on it, but if you open the screen, you can walk right in.
It's get that old, as it slams shut. Yeah. Yeah, you just go in. There's a welcome mat right there.
Wipe your feet.
It says guano welcome. It's got entrance. A little flying saucer on it and an alien waving.
Yep.
You know,
yep. No guano whatsoever in this entrance.
That's right. That's right.
I make you trudge through the poop. I didn't.
But, you know, so the expedition didn't find the metal library. But Armstrong remarked of his time in the cave that it rivaled his experience on the moon, which that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know. Golden library or not, this cave is a spectacle. I mean, it is massive. It is impressive. And I would imagine getting down that far into the earth. It probably would be kind of like going to the moon, you know, you're in uncharted territory, my friend, you know, so just watch where you step. Yeah. Now, Hall remained determined to locate the library and even convinced Armstrong to join a second expedition. But the second expedition was ultimately canceled due to the political instability in Ecuador. Remember, the government was all on board for the first one. But, you know, you change hands a little bit and all of a sudden the new government's like, yeah, not so much. And it wasn't necessarily like they elected a new leader that just didn't want to give the okay. It's like there was some unrest going on. So venturing down there, you could be like, you know, it's like going to the Congo or something, you know. It's like, wait a minute. Why are there guards with, you know, machine guns outside of my hotel? Because that's the way it works down here.
Mm-hmm.
So they canceled that one. So in time, the mystery of the Golden Library seemed kind of just to fade into nothing but a legend. But Moritz and other key figures who had claimed knowledge of the cave secrets, they all died. So another man who once claimed to have inscribed his name onto the metal books insisted that the true entrance was in a different location. And he was collaborating with Stan Hall to pinpoint its whereabouts when he was mysteriously murdered before he revealed any substantial information.
What a coincidence.
I know. Look, if this guy unnamed guy shows up and says, not only do I know of another entrance, I wrote my name on one of the plates, mm-hmm. and I can take you to it. Okay, you're like, yeah, whatever. But then he gets murdered. Then now you're beginning to go, uh-oh, maybe there is something to this.
Yeah, he was probably right.
I mean, maybe. I mean, seriously. And the thing is you've got to take the whole idea of an alien-influenced culture and all this out of the picture. There could be legitimate artifacts that could be studied, and maybe that's exactly what they show. I don't know. But the artifacts, nonetheless, were important to find. And I don't think it's unreasonable to believe that these artifacts existed. It may not have been to the grandeur that Maurice said.
Right.
But they already found other artifacts inside the cave. It's reasonable to me to believe that there would be more if they could just explore more of this vast cave system or go in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it could end up like the Rosetta Stone thing where we unlock part of a language or something that we didn't before, or some knowledge that we didn't have before because of these artifacts. And it's worth continuing to try to find.
Even if we just learn more about these prehistoric cultures that were in that area.
Absolutely.
I mean, it would be way, way more valuable than just about anything else we found.
Mm-hmm.
So subsequent expeditions have continued to explore the cave, but none have uncovered evidence of the Golden Library. Geologists now assert that the cave's tunnels were naturally formed rather than artificially carved by unknown forces, which also seems reasonable. A scientific interest in the cave shifted from its supposed alien origins to its ecological and archaeological significance, the legends of extraterrestrial artifacts has kind of faded into the background. Like I was saying, we could take this out of the equation, and then you still are talking about something that's really important.
Yep.
So in the 1990s, this is after Maurice's death, a retired Ecuadorian officer named Petronio Jaramillo claimed that he had also seen the library, but he wasn't with Maurice. And he was guided by a Shuar friend from his youth. This would have occurred around 1946.
Oh, wow.
He states that the caves had a large number of carved stone animals and a large crystal coffin that stored a 9-foot-tall golden human skeleton.
Golden.
So you got to think, okay, maybe it was just a gold skeleton that they made 9-foot-tall. Maybe it was a 9-foot skeleton of something that was gilded, you know, to preserve it.
Yep. That's what I was thinking. They put gold on it like the Aztecs did and stuff. They coated everything in gold.
Exactly.
So,
you know, the most expensive sugar skull ever.
Okay, yeah,
so
right.
Jaramillo described the Golden Library as, quote, shelves made of yellow metal that had hundreds of huge books made of a golden metal. The books resembled geometry books, according to him. The descriptions of the Golden Library differ, though, from each of his accounts. Now, Jaramillo would later describe the Golden Library as having Magyar writings. Jaramillo's wife, however, says she never believed him. Said, he's full of it. Because she said, quote, I know it wasn't true. It isn't true that he grew up as a child with the Shuar. God, you know, will you be quiet, woman?
Yeah, I'm trying to do something here. Stop ruining.
Don't listen to her. You know, listen to me. She don't know nothing. She's calling him out on all of his stuff.
I grew up there. She didn't. She doesn't know.
Like what? You know, I didn't tell you everything.
Right.
So from 2006, 2009, Argentinian filmmaker and explorer Alex Chinetti, who's a protege of the cave's original 1960s discoverers, launched a series of expeditions. And in 2007, following months of difficult jungle trekking and conflict with local tribes, he successfully penetrated the depths of the Cohuangas River Cave. Now within the Pastaza Tayo system, Chinetti found animal figures and a gold patina engraving featuring a double quadrilateral. So, in case my fumbling over those words confused you, in 2007, Chinetti found animal figures. Okay? Carved animal figures. What okay. Old Jaramillo said. And these gold patina engravings featuring a double quadrilateral. Remember, Jaramillo said they look like geometry textbooks.
Yeah, that's right. Okay? Yep.
Now, he is not in the Golden Library, and he's also not at the bottom of the Tayos Cave that they had originally explored. He is in the depths of the Cohuangas River Cave, which is within the Tayos system. So it makes you think, just like Mammoth Cave, we found a cave, you know, 150 miles away. We researched long enough, and yep, it connects.
It connects. Yeah.
So there's a real, you know, this is in the same network. So if it's in the same network, maybe they were going in the wrong way. Maybe this is the way they were supposed to go in all along. Now, importantly, he was the first to digitally record Maritz's entrance gate, which is, interestingly enough, formerly known as Von Däniken's gate. I mean, I can't imagine that Maritz and Von Däniken saw eye to eye on everything. I mean, you know, they're going, you know, Von Däniken's written this book. It's a bestseller. And Maritz is going, hey, what about me? What am I, chopped liver?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Credit here, man.
Yeah.
Finders.
But he identified the cornerstone, which is an architectural feature suggesting the caves could have been artificially modified. So, some civilization used the caves, you know, was in and out of the caves, possibly did something to fortify them so that there was less likely that an entrance may cave in or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Chinetti brought global attention to the site in 2010 because he was a consulting producer for Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. Now, his bestseller, Mysteries of the Tayos Caves, he details his survival against the hostile Shuar party. Remember, the headhunters that attacked his group upon their exits. One story said that a group was attacked by Shuar women hitting them with wet leaves.
That's not a good defense.
But, I mean, if you're not attacking and somebody is hitting you with wet leaves, that kind of sucks. Okay? I'm like, stop. Yep, will you please stop? And depending on how aggressive they were and what kind of leaves they were, it might have been very unpleasant.
I'm sure it was,
Now, the American press headlined the event likening Chinetti to a real-life Indiana Jones who was fleeing through the Amazon. Run, you know, like Indiana Jones, you know, found some idol and he's running, you know, that famous thing where, you know, he runs up and the dude's got the sword, you know, and like, where are you going? He shoots him, you know, so something like that. So I don't, Chinedi didn't kill anybody. Now, Josh Gates.
That we know of.
Josh Gates, Adam's buddy.
Yep.
Adam loves Josh Gates.
I would love to hang out with that dude.
Pretty awesome dude. The host of the Travel Channel Discovery series, Expedition Unknown, conducted a high-profile investigation of Cueva de los Teos. His expedition brought modern attention to the legend and provided a visual look at the cave's difficult terrain. Like, this ain't easy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, joining Gates, interestingly enough, was Eileen Hall. You've heard that name before. This was Stan Hall's daughter, the original man that led the 1976 expedition. Now, Gates investigated the geological formations that look like artificial structures. He examined this, quote, perfectly cut stone, the archways and the tunnels, and he was very impressed with their symmetry. But the show sort of leans more towards, these were probably natural geological formations created by water and pressure rather than any kind of form of ancient engineering.
Yeah.
Now, in a very dramatic sequence in the show, Gates and his team squeeze through a tight, water-filled tunnel to reach a previously less explored chamber. And inside there, they found stairs, a formation that strikingly resembled a staircase, but still, it's most likely a natural calcium carbonate formation. They did find artifacts. Genuine ancient pottery shards and stone tools, confirming ancient human habitation, though not the advanced technology that was claimed by the library legends. Just regular prehistoric people.
Right.
And then they found the cauliflower room. They documented a massive chamber filled with unique biogenic formations resembling cauliflower, which showcased
pizza crust made out of cauliflower.
But that just shows this fascinating biological ecosystem that resides in this cave, which Adam touched on earlier. You know, all the different, life that has adapted to being inside this cave with no light, everything. And so here is some type of growth that resembles cauliflower deep down in this dark part of this cave.
Yeah. They got now, crabs that in the
crabs
cave.
And shrimp.
That's
weird
to me.
Well, somebody's got to clean it up.
Yeah, true.
One of the most fascinating moments of this particular show was an interview with a Shuar guide whose father had been a porter for the 1976 Neil Armstrong expedition. And the guide claimed that his father witnessed Ecuadorian military personnel removing heavy boxes from the cave during the 1976 expedition, which doesn't mean squat other than maybe there was something in those boxes, maybe not. Okay. But
maybe they were taking rocks.
It's possible. You know, I know you hear something like that and you immediately go, but I got to think that with all the unrest around the 70s with the Ecuadorian government, somebody would have tried to make a buck off of having anything of any significant value, golden tablets or not. If it was of value, whether historical, geological, or just flat out monetarily, if it was just gold, somebody would have gotten their hands on it and said, we can make some money off of this.
And if it was the military, not a private person, it would have gotten out.
But that testimony added fuel to the conspiracy that the library was found, but was secretly looted by the government or military, which leaves nothing for future explorers. So ultimately, Josh Gates didn't find the library. But he did find some pretty fascinating things. More evidence that people were living within that cave, or at least dwelling there for a period of time, which is pretty significant. But I don't know. Just like we said, I don't know that I buy that anybody looted that cave and then here we are in 2025 and nobody's got any evidence that somebody tried to display or sell or whatever, use it for leverage, nothing.
Tablets didn't turn up on the black market anywhere.
There's not some big golden necklace. You know, there's not like a coffin or a gilded bone, nothing. Somebody would have been like, look at this, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, it's just with all the going back and forth in the Ecuadorian government, surely somebody would have gotten their hands on something that would have said, check this out, and it would have gotten out. So I don't know that I believe any about that being looted. You know, if it's down there, they hadn't found it, and it's questionable if it's down there at all. So Gates concluded that while the cave is a geological wonder and an important archaeological site for indigenous history, the Golden Library probably doesn't exist. But if it does, he agrees that it remains hidden in a section of the cave that is currently inaccessible. Mm. So they say that this expedition really took a toll on Josh Gates, and he reportedly got pretty sick from rotavirus from the bat-infested waters of the cave. So
yeah, apparently several of his crew did too, and they were all in the hospital.
So I mean, you gotta respect Josh Gates for, you know, even attempting anything like this, and then, you know, to put his own health at risk. You know, not just the fact that any of them could have died trying to get in this stupid cave. But, you know, that's one thing out of all the wildlife, the, you know, venomous spiders and scorpions and stuff and potential of snakes and, you know, slipping and falling or getting stuck or whatever. We hadn't even talked about the fact that you could have caught some disease, you know, while exploring around in there. I mean, super, super, super dangerous. And I could completely understand, one, why nobody like me would want to go in there, but two, why people like Josh Gates actually want to. Because it is important enough that, you know, if it's down there, somebody's gonna try to go find it. And as big as that cave system is, I don't know that we'll ever know, because I don't think they'll ever be able to come out and go, we've explored all of it.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. You mentioned, you know, there were parts that they couldn't get to because it was flooded out. There's a fluctuation of groundwater all the time. Mm-hmm. So if Moritz found something, couldn't get it out, how many years later was it before the next expedition? And that chamber, that passageway could have flooded.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Before the next got there. And then it's going to take decades more for that water to recede or change direction or cut a big enough hole in the sandstone for people to be able to actually wade through it or something before they can find it again. So it's still, to me, worth looking again at a later date.
Because I'd say a minimum of 10 years passed.
Right.
You know, between, you know, Moritz's group and the 1976 expedition, because in 68, the Mormons went down there and never went to the cave.
Right.
You know, you're thinking, okay, so we know it was several years before that he actually did have an expedition there. So that's why I say probably at least 10 years between. And so lot could happen in that cave system between those years that the 76 expedition may not have even gone the same path because they couldn't.
Right. And like we said early on, I'm not convinced by any of it that it's alien or anything like that. But I do think there's a high possibility that an ancient civilization hid treasures or documents of some sort in this cave for future civilizations to find, or because the cave, you know, they had venerated the cave or something and it was holy mm-hmm. to them, and they were putting their spiritual documents in there to for safekeeping. Yeah. So I think it's worth trying to find, if it's real, at least for the historical significance. I'm not on board with, oh, aliens put this mm-hmm. in here to do this. Even if the cave is naturally formed, that doesn't negate that there could be some historical items down in this cave.
Yep.
I'm not going to be the one to squeeze my butt through any of this stuff. But, you know, I, like we said on SideQuest, it gives me the willies to think about doing some of this right. stuff, because how easily you could die doing it. But there are people willing yeah. to do it, and there are people brave enough to do it. So let's keep exploring. Yeah. Let's keep trying to find it. Take ROVs. We've got ROVs now. So take some ROVs down there and put them through flooded mm-hmm. chambers and see if we can get to the other side of this chamber. And just, you know, wouldn't it be crazy if you put an ROV in there, ran it through this flooded tunnel, and when it popped up, you saw stone mm-hmm. tablets around the walls. Yeah. Then you could at least say, hey, we can't get to it yet, but we know right. it's there. I found it. Let's find another mm-hmm. way in.
Yeah. I you know, I'm with you. I think there's a really good chance that there's stuff down there. I don't believe that it's anything that's going to connect an ancient civilization to aliens. And it may not even be gold, but just the finding ancient writings like that, it's worth it. I mean, it's what if we just learned a little bit more about the people that were there before the Shuar tribe? I mean, right. that,
right.
you know, that's valuable history.
That's worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But what do you guys think? Do you think that there's a chance that the Golden Library is really there? You know, if I promise, if you look into the book Gold of the Gods, you will come away really thinking there might very well be something down there.
Yep.
You know, especially when you look at some of the pictures in it. Let us know. What do you think? The best place to do that is in our Facebook group. That's where you can share your personal stories. You can talk about experiences. You can give your opinions on the show or the topic that we're discussing. We just love having a safe environment where people can come and talk about this stuff and share things, everything from, you know, jokes to, you know, there's a ghost in my basement. So get in there. Mm-hmm. And don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and that is where you can become a patron. And thank you so much yep. to everyone who has supported the work that Adam and I've, you know, have done for, you know, a little over 8 years now. We mm-hmm. sincerely appreciate it, and it helps us keep the show going.
Oh, yeah.
So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.